time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. It is November 28th, Monday, and it's the day after Thanksgiving weekend. And boy, I hope you all enjoyed your Thanksgiving. We have so much to be grateful for. You go like, what do we have to be grateful for? Licking, the market's in the toilet. We've got no volume. We are just struggling to stay alive. We're bleeding red ink. Well, sometimes you got to get outside of looking at the mortgage industry to be able to realize just how grateful what we do have. We have a great industry that we serve. And you look at the underpinnings of this industry, you look at the demographics, you look at the Gen Zers and the home ownership rate there, man, opportunity all over the place. We have millennials still lagging way, way behind. Only 40% of them own homes, when normally we should be at 70-some percent at this stage in their generation. Folks, we have so much to be grateful for. Yeah, we're going through some of the most difficult times we have ever seen in the industry. I've been in it. I'm in my 50th year. And so, yes, we've seen this one, but we're still funding at really, there's some of the highest volumes. We're going to be talking all about this with Mr. Kittle a little bit later on, and the group will be talking about what we have great to be very grateful for in this industry. We are definitely going through some strong times, difficult times, and I do not want to minimize those for those that are suffering, that have got lost jobs, or who are watching the blood of red ink on the floor or out there in the battlefield. So we'll be talking about this, but we do have much to be grateful for, and I'm grateful to have you as our listening audience. Again, this podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals. We're grateful to have you as our listener. Again, our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. I want to say thank you to our sponsors, Candor, our newest sponsor, who is doing such a great job. It is the only automated underwriting system to earn a patent for its unique tech solutions, especially in the area of underwriting. It's really brilliant what Tom and his company have done. Also, Candor helps optimize the loan delivery workflow so operations can right-size for the last time. In other words, you can get more work done with the Candor system. Greater productivity all the way around. Be sure to check out Candor, C-A-N-D-O-R, technology. And you want to get a link, go to our website, Licking on Lending, or give me a call, and I'd be happy to introduce you to the appropriate people there. Also, Finastra, the largest fintech company in the world. They have market-leading point-of-sale origination platforms that every independent mortgage banker and anyone in the mortgage lending space needs to at least look at. Check out finastra.com. And then also FormFree, it is the leading provider of direct source verifications of assets and verifications of income and employment data for mortgage lenders. FormFree, done some of the most amazing things. Listen to the interview we did with Brent Chandler on October 17th of this year, 2022. Check him out. Then also we have Total Expert. They do a great job with our with helping in the overall process of in connecting with consumers. I'm thinking of several things. That's what my mind, you say, like stuttering here a little bit. Well, they are truly a CRM, purpose-built CRM that really helps with customer engagement, but in such a bigger way. I want to encourage you to check out what they're doing, and they do have a special going between now and the end of the year that you have to call me about, because it is for our listeners and as well as for some of the people that are already client or here that are considering their system. It's not for everyone. So get a hold of me. There's some pricing concessions that they're willing to do between now and the end of the year. So get a hold of me. Also, Simple Nexus. They have the mortgage software and technology for the modern lender. What is the modern lender? And this is some of the latest things on how you get greatest amount of efficiencies. If you know anything about Simple Nexus, you know they're about efficiencies. And if you know anything about them, they are buying up the best leading companies out there. We have, for example, November 2nd, we had Lori Brewer, who used to own LBAware. That's one of the companies Simple Nexus acquired. And you need to check out that interview and listen to all that's on the drawing table, drawing for what they're yet to do. Their vision is amazing. Also, I want to say a special thank you to Mortgage Bankers Association of America, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, Knowledge Group, Mobility MMI, Modex, and the Mortgage Advisory Tools. We're grateful for all of our sponsors that are here with us, and so thankful for them making this possible. Also, our last podcast, November 25th, we did the interview. We released the interview with Tim Davis of Atlantic Bay Mortgage. And it says, The Circle of Referrals book and Originator's Guide magazine. We talked a lot about what you can do on referrals. Tim is abundant amount of energy. And do check out that interview that we did, we released on the 25th last week. This week, we have coming up November 30th, we got Tom Showalter of Candor. This one is a must-listen-to interview because of the technology, his vision for the technology. You've got to listen to this. Even if you're saying, we're not going to go down the path, we're not spending another dollar in technology. I understand that. Many are really looking at their tech spends and trying to cut technology, not take on new technology. This one, you need to listen to it because it will literally pay for itself. And then also December 2nd of this week, we have Justin DeMoya of Lenders One. He's going to be talking about how Lender One opened up branded mortgage branch locations in select Walmart stores in Florida and New Jersey, and their plan is to open them up nationwide. So good to have you all with us. A big special thank you. We're grateful to Adam DeSantis. Adam does a great job with the MBA report. We're going to hear it listened to in just a minute. Les Parker, Mark Graham, David Kittle, Alice Alvey, Alan Pollock, Mark Helm, my co-host. Mark, good to see that you made it in. How are you doing, friend? You have a good Thanksgiving?
I certainly did, Dave, and certainly glad to be here today.
Well, I'm glad to have you here. Let's get over to Adam DeSantis and listen to what he's got for us with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute. And what is the MBA focusing on? Here we go.
Hi, I'm Adam DeSantis. This is the Mortgage Minute, the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Here's what you need to know. Last week, the Department of Housing and Urban Development issued long-awaited updates to its mandatory flood insurance requirements and will now permit lenders to accept private flood insurance policies for FHA-insured mortgages, a move for which MBA has strongly advocated since 2017. The final rule closely tracks some of the interagency provisions but is not aligned in certain key areas, including compliance aid language, discretionary acceptance of policies that do not meet HUD criteria, and mutual aid societies. MBA cautions that use of HUD's compliance aid only ensures compliance with HUD regulations and not the interagency regulations. Additionally, not all private flood insurance policies permitted under the Bigger Waters Act will meet FHA requirements. MBA will continue to advocate for uniformity and consistency in private flood insurance requirements for all types of mortgages. That's it for this week. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Adam. We're going to be discussing a couple items in that analysis segment. So let's just wait for the discussion around that. But thank you, Adam DeSantis and the MBA. Be sure to sign up for the Action MBA's Mortgage Action Alliance app. You can download that on your iPhone, smartphone, as well as your any smartphone. Download the app and make sure you have you're staying current on the things that the MBA is focusing on. Appreciate the MBA for their commitment to our industry and all that they're doing to help us. Thank you, Adam. Really appreciate that. This week, we've got Les Parker here, and I did a sneak peek and listened to the sound, the song that he selected, and it is very fitting for what's going on in the market. So let's hear from Les Parker and TM Spotlight in this week's Macro View of the Markets. What you got for us, Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by PowerSeller, making hedging easy.
Do the bears cry, La Bamba? Dancing bulls yell La Bamba. By necessity, mortgage bankers live by grace. Lenders found the relief from tears engendered by the relentless bears who now cry as the bulls establish a new trend. But sadly, the beginning of the bull market gives no hope for long-term rates to fall far enough, fast enough to lift production. Ironically, China's COVID lockdowns slow down the world and allow rates to fall. It stops the bleeding and restores dancing to higher prices and coupon liquidity. So enjoy premium grace. Party, party, arriba, up, up, up. These views are my own. Find the party at tmspotlight.com.
Good job in the music, Les. Good upbeat. Great upbeat tune there. So when you sit and think about these markets, you're looking at all the things that are driving it. The macro view of the markets is an important thing. And if you're not signed up for Les's newsletter, be sure to do so. You can go to tmspotlight.com and you can sign up for the paid version and get it for free if you put in the word power in the where it says ask for a code, put in the word power for Power Seller, and you'll be able to get that newsletter. It's a really good read. It's something everyone should be looking at. A lot of people say, I read it and I don't understand half of it. Just keep reading it. You're going to be amazing what you start picking up on it. Matt Graham could not join us today. Just heard from him just before the program starts. Something going on with Matt. He's doing fine. Don't worry about that. Not sounding any alarms. But I do want to talk about what's on the screen here. And we're seeing a nice start of the day off with interest rates at the lowest. Looking at the 10-year, it looks like things were improving. We're starting to see it inching up here a bit now. But what we have on the economic calendar is the Case-Shiller report. Looking forward to that data on Tuesday, as well as let's see what FHFA home price index. So we're going to get some indication on the housing market. Again, those numbers should be reflective. We're seeing Case-Shiller home prices down. It's anticipated being down some. But then on Wednesday, we have the ADP jobs report. That's going to be a big one, as well as GDP for preliminary for third quarter. It is projected, the previous, looking at GDP here, the previous was 2.6. We're looking for a 2.7 number. We'll see if that comes in as that. There's pending home sales number. That'll be interesting to see what that number comes in, as well as I'm seeing pending sales index. Oh, that's what it is. Pending sales index and the pending home sales. So we'll have both that data in there. And then Thursday, we have the jobless claims. That will be huge. Core CP or PCE numbers, producer price, the PCE numbers will be coming on that. I'm looking at the number of data as it's changing here as I'm reading. So lots of good data coming out on Thursday. It could be a big market mover. Non-farm payrolls will also be a big number on Friday. So towards the end of the week, unemployment number will be coming out on Friday. So personal consumption expenditures, that's the PCE number. I was messing that up with a couple others. So core PCE, we'll be taking a look at that. Expected to drop just slightly. Not a big change. Each one of these numbers are just dropping slightly. Unemployment rate expected to stay the same at 3.7. See if that is in fact the case. Non-farm payroll expected to drop to previously 261 down to 200. So a lot of information coming out more later in the week, but who knows the macro view of the economic, what's going on in China and elsewhere. Global economics are having the biggest impact on interest rates and where we at. So let's get a discussion going with a roundtable. Mark Helm, good to have you here. Let's get you in on talking about this topic. What do you see as far as it relates to the where we're at on interest rates? What are you hearing? And then get over to Mr. Kittle and then Alice.
Well, as you know, David, we all of us on this call talk to different people in the industry all day, you know, every day. And I got a real troublesome call last week because I heard from somebody who was giving me some insight on a mortgage company that I got a lot of respect for that is basically shutting down. I'm not at liberty to talk about who that is today, but let's just say it's a major, major player in the industry. And I just... you remember Thomas Wolfe wrote a book, You Can't Go Home Again? Well, I'm beginning to believe we're going to see some shutdowns now where people can't come home again. There's going to be some companies going out of business that's not coming back. But I think there's going to be a lot of survivors, too, and a lot of people mm-hmm. are doing smart things. I talked to numerous people this last 2 weeks that have instituted what I consider some very proactive programs internally to manage expenses and to stay on top of putting some plans together to keep their good staff on board to weather the storm. And then I got other companies that are looking at selling some of the servicing to make ends meet. A lot of those, in fact, selling servicing kind of make ends meet during the hard times. So I think the industry is adjusting, and we commonly have it where the industry does some downsizing, which adjusts anyway, and Mr. Kittle can address that better than me. But, you know, we see that. That's the nurturing and caring of our industry. It grows and it downsizes. It grows and downsizes. And a lot of that's good for the industry because sometimes we get a little too big for our britches and we need to calm back down and do things. So I think that's happening a little bit. We'll see more and more of that. But I'm still very bullish on our industry, and I think we're survivors. And having seen about five or six cycles of this in my career, I think we'll come out of it a stronger, better industry. And as long as we got trade organizations helping us out, like NBA and others, and keeping us pointed in the right direction, and as long as the people in Congress are focusing on the homeownership for people to make things better, I think we'll come out of this stronger and be able to do everything quicker, better, faster. So I'm going to hang in there and keep the faith.
Yep, good thing. Keep the faith. Mr. Kittle, when you start hearing, we're hearing too, where there are names being floated around as to who's going to make it, who's not. Any thoughts on interest rates as we're focusing a little bit on interest rates, but it does have the impact on where things are at as it involves the overall health of the industry and many other participants. Your thoughts?
Well, I think we're going to see some little bit of decline on the rates. We've already seen some of that, and I think that's a plus. And I think we're going to ride a range here for a while, so I think there will be some variation as we go through the winter months, and which have typically been lower in volume, and we really won't have that major effect on us because it's in the time of the year when a lot of home sales don't happen. So we'll see what happens.
For those that are confused, I did throw the question to Kittle, and we heard Mark chime back in.
Oh, I'm
Mark,
sorry. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
That
I just want to make sure our listeners knew.
Sorry about that, Mr. Kittle.
Go ahead, Mr. Kittle. That's your thought.
Hey,
that's good. That's a good addition, Mark. Yeah. What?
What Mark said.
I got to retune my
on.
David. I got to retune my hearing aids.
The batteries went. I heard you shut your hearing aids off when you're talking to Sally. So that, you go, what, dear? What, dear? Okay, I'm teasing you. Anyway, so Mr. Kittle, what are you hearing out there? We're starting to hear a pretty good number of companies that are at risk of going out, and they're a pretty significant size.
Well, a couple of things just on Mark's point there about interest rates that, you know, they're still higher than everybody wants them to be. The refinance boom, as we all know, is over. We're into the holidays right now, coming into December. If I still have one of my lending companies, I'm all the way out to Q2 for 23, because Q1 probably is going to be a disaster from volume and interest rate standpoint. To your question about people getting rid of their companies, closing down. You know, there's people that have been in it for a long time, and they're trying to balance out this may be the second or third major happening in the industry they've gone through, and they want to take their cash off the table. Mm-hmm. And they built their companies for a long time. There aren't a lot of buyers out there for the number that they want. Remember, it's always worth more to you selling than it is buying. And I'm talking to some people that are going through acquisitions and selling right now. It's difficult to put a value on the company right now. And so people are saying, okay, I'll just take my cash, I'm done, and walk. And I think that's what you're seeing right now. They're not willing to burn their cash for the next, 18 months. And I think it's going to be a long ride on this one.
Yeah, I hope you're wrong, but I think you're not shut off. I was thinking we're going to be able to come through this by second quarter next year because of the carnage that is ensuing, and because of some instability, what seems like instability in some of the politics of where we're at. I think this could go a little bit longer. I'm hoping not. But
David,
if
it is to your point that that the market turns around and interest rates lower quickly, that means, again, and I've said this probably for the last 3 or 4 weeks on your show, it means the Fed has no rudder and it has no conviction against inflation, because all that'll do is fuel it back up again, and then we've done nothing to put a Band-Aid on it. So I hope I'm wrong too, but
I think
this in the next 90 days is not a cure.
Yeah, well, there's certainly an emotional factor that's playing into this. Everyone's looking at where things are at. I mean, we know where we were, the volumes that we're funding at when interest rates were at these levels, when we fell down to these levels from previous highs. And ago, it was a while back, but we were still falling. We still have a very strong funding record, and from a historical standpoint, still decent numbers. But the number one thing that I'm most encouraged about, and then Alice, coming to you for your thoughts, is the demographics. You look at the MBA slide. I loved how – I thought the MBA did – specifically, Mike and Marina did a great job. Mike Frattantoni and Marina Walsh did a fabulous job presenting the facts – actually at the annual conference, and they said, hey, listen, I'm not going to color it any other way. We don't have good news here. It's ugly. But let's look at, and the slides were the most interesting to me were the demographic slides, the slides specifically about the rate of home ownership, the percentage of home ownership amongst Gen Zers and millennials. We're still down at the 40% range when it should be at, for at least the millennials, up at closer approaching 65-70%, which is more normal for the buying habit. In other words, millennials put off the decision to buy a home. Why would they not? This is the one of those markets. They couldn't afford it when it was shooting up at double-digit rates. Now we're seeing things starting to fall. Why would you want to buy a home in a market where property values are going to continue to fall? And then Gen Zers are looking around going, hey, we want to get in, but not sure when. My daughter and her husband just bought a home. By the way, folks, I'm happy to let you know, we're going to be grandparents. Our daughter is pregnant with our first grandchild. So very excited. And so that motivated to maintain those. I bring that up because it's life events like that that cause people, Gen Zers in their case, to jump on and buy a home. And they've got great jobs in a particular part of the one of the sectors that's going to continue to remain strong. So both have great jobs, both looking good. They felt confident and they bought a home at the right time in the market. There's enough of that going on out there, folks, that I think that we are in a place where there is much to be grateful for. These are the things. While there are many, they're going to feel a lot of pain. I think there's a real opportunity to see more than a glass half full. I think when we come through this on the other side, where interest rates settle down, we get some emotions settle out of it, that get boiled out of this mess, then we're going to see ourselves wake up and find ourselves a whole lot less participants and a huge opportunity ahead of us. So hang in there. So Alice, get your perspective on rates and markets, where what we can anticipate. You've been in the industry for a while.
Yeah, I think just to dovetail a little bit off of the initial messaging that you were referencing, and that's that the house price index is going to come out this week, which will give FISA the final information, which we think they already know, but it'll validate that then they can move forward with what our maximum loan amounts will be for 2023. So just as loan officers from the sales side, all of you who are out there with these struggles that all of you have just talked about, you really have to sharpen your tools in coaching customers, to your point, Dave, about Gen Z, more Gen X, millennials, Gen Z, making sure that they're fully informed about home ownership and you're on top of the news with things like that. You can talk to them about the direction of the markets and how to be able to save money. David's brought up on past shows about temporary buy downs, and then now this with the loan amount change. You just have to be there for people, and the loans will be there. Just have to have all the tools and be smart about your business and do a lot of educating these days, more so than a lot of people are used to in the last 10 years. So that's my 2 cents.
Good 2 cents. Alan Pollock, you're here. Love to get your thoughts.
Yeah, you know, it's I think David's right. A couple of folks are probably just at that point where they're thinking, you know, maybe it's just time to do something different. But I also think that, you know, inflation is still affecting everybody. There was something I actually read recently online that some certain amount of Gen Zers were looking at doing for their Friendsgiving pizza instead of turkey. So imagine that. We're at the time when turkey is too expensive. So it's something that folks that are have those life-changing events, like you mentioned, your daughter, and congratulations, by the way. I saw the reveal on Facebook and how much that just looked like a ton of fun and super exciting. But anyways, you know, I think that coaching is needed, right? There is a home for everyone, and there's a way to buy a home, and I think it comes down to coaching and understanding what it is you're buying and how to buy it.
Yeah, the coaching is one of the things where I think we need to become a coaching organization. I do executive coaching, and I see such a huge need for it, and it's leadership coaching. I think the leaders, the head, those that are heading up companies, so whether you're heading up production, I'm thinking of Emily Farley at Atlantic Bay, does an amazing job of heading up production for the group, chief lending officer there. I'm looking at some others out there that are just doing a really good job of managing their companies. And it's about leadership and what are you sending out there messaging? And that's what I want to make sure every one of you that listen to this podcast regularly, listen, what you listen to. It's like when you're driving a car, Alice and I both, you know, I grew up in Minnesota. Alice was up in Michigan. She's still up in the snow country. You know, where your eyes go is where your car goes. And so what are you looking at? I think the same thing goes as a man thinketh in his heart, so is he. I think there is, when we look at the what we're thinking about, are you looking at all the woe is me, all the negativity out there? Are you looking at the demographic that suggests we could have ourselves one heck? We're in the midst of a nasty storm, granted. But, man, I just need to stay alive, live to play another day. We're going to be fine. And for those that are going out of business, we thank you for your participation in this industry. You've done a great job. You had a great run. But all I would say there is take good care of your people on the way out. And as you do whatever you're going to do with your company, take care of your people. They are the ones that got you to where you're at. Could go on and on and about that. And but we got to get on to some other segments. So thank you for everyone for your participation in that discussion. I think this is about leadership, and this is a time about vision and leadership. And what are you looking at? What are you listening to? David Kittle, let's get an update on what you're seeing on the production. And generally speaking, we know the numbers are not looking good, and they continue not to look good for a period of time. I really appreciate, like Alice said, your encouragement. It's time to dust off some of those old skills of getting creative on the financing. Anything else you have for us today?
Well, you know, not a lot new, David, other than what we just covered here in the last couple of weeks. We are after Thanksgiving. It's coming into December. We've got, what, 2.5 weeks before everything starts shutting down again because it's Christmas. And, you know, those that have, oh, I sound like a broken record, but those that have the relationships with the builders, the realtors, going through their pipelines when they close a loan, asking for referrals, looking back on how to structure a loan are going to get the deals going forward. Because right now it's, you know, it is about rate, but it's about the structure of the loan and being able to talk to the customers and get both the husband and the wife involved in the structure of the deal to make right. them feel comfortable with the higher interest rates. I mean, that's what it is. It's going to take work and effort, and really that's okay because it sharpens us for the next few months, and we're going to need it.
We're going to need it. Yep, absolutely. Great. Mr. Kittle, thank you. Appreciate that. Let's get over to Alice Alvey. She is here, CMB Vice President of Education and Training in Union Home Mortgage. And we're getting over to her a little bit. She's got a legislative update, and quite a one is. I saw the headline forwarded over to Alice, but there is really some interesting new legal action going on with the CFPB. Let's start there, Alice. Good to have you on the podcast, and thank you for your feedback contribution so far.
Oh, thanks, Dave. Well, hello, everyone. Hey, yes, so we had the issue with the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fifth Circuit ruled that the CFPB, their independent funding mechanism is unconstitutional. And so the way, for those of you who aren't familiar with how the CFPB is funded today, based on the way they were set up in the Dodd-Frank Act, they're essentially under the Federal Reserve. And so they receive an allocation from the Federal Reserve on a quarterly basis. You can actually see what this number is on the CFPB website. They send a letter to the Federal Reserve Chair, and they go, hey, we need, well, as a matter of fact, the October 14th, 2022 request was, we need $314,700,000. Can you please transfer that into our account? And the Federal Reserve says, sure, no problem. It'll be in your account tomorrow. So you can see these letters all the way back to when the CFPB was created. I don't know about you, Dave, but these numbers vary from $67 million to $700 million quarter by quarter. Something's wrong in the budgeting if you're flip-flopping that much from one quarter to the next. But that's a different subject.
Great observation.
So they have a second component where they can request up to $200 million in discretionary spending. The discretionary piece would run through the House, but this idea of just being able to send a letter to the Federal Reserve requesting funds every quarter is what's considered the part that is the funding mechanism being unconstitutional, because according to our Constitution, I think it's Article 1, I forget which section, 6 maybe, it says that the, you know, the House holds the purse strings and they should be approving this. Now, they're not unique in that there are other departments of the government that do have direct funding or other mechanisms for funding, but they're along the lines of health care and Social Security and that type of thing. So we'll see. So the CFPB has asked the Supreme Court to weigh in now because they want to clear their name and make sure they're allowed to be funded. Previous cases have said that this can be separate from is the CFPB constitutional in and of itself. But obviously,
right.
if you take away their money, no one's going to show up to work the next day. So that's a discussion to get folks' thoughts. And right now it looks like they've been given their funds through January. And what will happen is the Supreme Court needs to put this on their docket. They would like to have the arguments held sometime ASAP, perhaps January or February, so that then the court takes a couple of months to make a decision, and we usually hear about their decisions sometime then in June. So just to give everyone a timeline of what that might look like. But that's where we stand today.
Amazing, amazing, amazing amount of information. Let's park on that, get around everybody. I know you probably have a couple other things, Alice, you may want to talk about, but let's get some feedback. Mr. Kittle, you said just a moment ago, hey, it won't break my heart if we just shut down the CFPB altogether, got rid of that regulatory body. I think that's a general consensus with the industry, especially some of those who have been painfully writing some huge checks to the CFPB for findings, the quote-unquote findings that they have come up with. So your commentary, Mr. Kittle, shut them down, let it go away. It's been funding.
Well,
been
David, I have three comments here, actually,
yeah.
To think about this. You know, the CFP was born out of the credit crisis 7, 8, and 9, and I was chairman in 2009, so I was at ground zero for all of this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, 14 testimonies that I did while I was NBA chairman. This is an institution that was the brainchild of Elizabeth Warren. Just think about that, and I won't even comment on it. There's comment number one just for me. Make your own decisions on that one. This is an agency that was set up to oversee our industry, yet it has no oversight. What an oxymoron in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
They have no transparency on their funding. If we tried to do that or a bank tried to do that, they would come in and try to shut them down. What's wrong with the transparency or the approval of the funding? To Alice's point a minute ago, from 60 to 700 million, really? They ask it. I would ask Alice this, and I haven't looked back at the letters. It would be nice to know. Have they ever made a request, Alice, that they didn't get? Did the Fed ever come in and say, no, that's...
Right. Yeah, the money, you can see, here's my request, and the money comes back. Now you would assume.
Right,
they
so there's no trade. They just ask it, and they get it.
So
nobody's looking. They're not even asking what it's for. What's the seven next? What's $500 million for? What do you need that for this time? Fed's not asking that. Same Federal Reserve, by the way, over the years, but it happens to be the current one that just approved it that was slow on the trigger and the reason we have high inflation today. So it's a mess, and it needs to be totally revamped. And the last comment I have, the third one is, this is the second Supreme Court decision against CFPB.
That's right. Yeah, they've already been ruling against CFPB and hasn't been going well in the Supreme at SCOTUS.
Yeah, they can walk into anybody and shut them down and penalize them, and there's absolutely no congressional oversight. So again, the agency that was set up for oversight has no oversight. Let that sink in.
Pretty amazing. Yeah, that's great thoughts. I mean, you do have a unique perspective, having been the chairman of the NBA during that season. Wow, what a time to have been chairman, Mr. Kittle. The history that was made during that time.
David, I got a few comments on that.
Yes. Go ahead. David, did you have a – then we'll come to you, Mark. Just finish up there, David.
Oh, I was just following up on that, Dave. I loved I enjoyed every second of it. 99% of the people in our business did it the right way, and it was the 1% that caused us most of the issue, and I love defending our industry. So that was it.
Yeah. Good. Mark, your thoughts.
Well, I was pretty tight during with some politicians when that was all coming together, and one of the things that they had fear of and I had fear of, that they originally thought that CFPB would be able to fund itself out of the penalties that charge people, you know, assess people.
I know.
Thank
that's good.
God that never happened.
Yeah.
Would have been if that happened. But I agree 100% everything Alice and Mr. Kittle said about oversight. I mean, the organization that has oversight has no oversight, which makes it. But the question I got to ask Alice is this. The Federal Reserve is like every other federal entity. It has a budget. Do we know what it budgeted for CFPB for the year?
I didn't get a chance to look into that deeply. You know, we could and find out about that. But I'm not sure if it's its own specific line item within the Federal Reserve's budget or not, where you could pull it out that easily.
I would think it would be that big a number.
Yeah.
You know, it would be, but maybe it's not. And then, you know, if you don't have a number, then you don't really have the protocol you need to approve a remittance of more than that number. You know what I mean? It's like there's no standard there, you know, to know what's acceptable and what's not. So just got a bunch of people in the Fed saying, yep, sign the check.
No.
It's kind of scary, isn't it? If we ran our banking account that way, we'd be in trouble.
Well, the no oversight is certainly an issue, and there's certainly a lot of people within the industry. There is one thing that I remember an article that Wiener Brodsky sent over to me and Jack Connick. I can't believe Jack is even is going to be retiring here. But for those of you that know and love Jack as much as I do, he's just so articulate, and he will be one person we miss in this industry tremendously. He's not retiring yet; sometime next year. But the point of it is he sent over, he says, Dave, look at all the regulatory bodies that are being consolidated into and under CFPB. And if I'm not mistaken, I have to go look this up, so don't hold me to this number, but it's like 23 different regulatory agencies all rolled up. So it was going to be one agency. This included the savings and loans. Remember the savings and loan debacle that happened back in the 80s? That got rolled up in there. There is some banking, so many consumer initiatives. So we had regulatory bodies scattered all across the landscape, and the idea was, well, let's bring them under one umbrella, and then we're going to have consistency. Well, I'm not sure that that's happened. But the point of it is that the undoing of CFPB presents another challenge. Be careful what you wish for, because then do we have the wild, wild west back? Do we have an unregulated industry, or do we have a new set of things? Sometimes the thing we wish for, we don't realize that's what's on the other side of that is a even more painful thing. So this is going to be real interesting to see how this plays out. I think, David, you bring up a really good point. It hasn't gone well for CFPB at the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think the whole funding thing was raised at the very beginning of the creation of CFPB that it was unconstitutional. I think it's interesting you brought up Elizabeth Warren, the Democrat from Massachusetts, who this was her brainchild. So not sure. I think that may answer a lot of these issues in and of itself. Not well thought out. Anyway, good stuff. Alan Pollock, do you want to contribute? Any thoughts you want to contribute to this?
No, I am going to go by the fantastic commentary that our team has done here. Compliance and regulation is something that I am definitely not the brightest handle in the room.
Well, you handle the technology really well.
Technology.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Great point. Alice, let's get back to you. Any other things that are on your radar you wanted to talk about beyond this? This is pretty big red letter report you gave us so far, but anything else that we should be paying attention to?
I do want to throw in one thing that about this topic that you just mentioned at the end as far as being careful what we wish for. So, yes, it was set up with some very big flaws in its structure, which we know, the leadership of it, that needs to be solved, that there's oversight there, that there's oversight in how they spend money. But if we really do think about, just throwing away the CFPB altogether, there's been a lot of regulation that has come into play as part of Dodd-Frank that they implemented and oversaw. And so to split that back, as you mentioned, between the multiple entities that would oversee us, including the states, I think we'd have a whole different set of challenges to deal with. So I think it has to be done right, and that's what everybody's biggest complaint is we can handle regulation if it's fair and we understand and it's transparent and we can prepare for it, and we're not being regulated based on litigation that comes out of various, we're not trying to understand regulations by other entities' findings. That's an impossible way to manage a company. So I think that's all I wanted to add regarding CFPB. But then last but not least, please pay attention to what MBA did write about as far as flood insurance changes that FHA made. Yes, they made it easier. There's always a big asterisk. So, and they we talked on that on the earlier segment. So please research that. Don't just tell your folks, oh, yeah, it's okay, now you can have private insurance with FHA, and that's all you tell them. There's some details in the weeds you want to make sure that you get right. So that's it, Dave. Thanks.
Good stuff. Good stuff, Alice.
So, David, can I throw something out? Just
yes, of course. Please do.
Yeah, to Alice's point, she makes a great point. You know, I don't want to blow the CFPB up totally. I just don't like the way it was structured initially, and I don't think anybody does. As far back as 2004, and this is one of the great things MBA does for everybody in our industry. You know, when Rob Couch was chairman, we wanted to stop mortgage fraud. MBA called for, even when I was chairman, for regulation on ourselves to be better placed towards the consumer. We just didn't want onerous regulation, which is what we've had. And there's a big difference between the two. So she's spot on. We don't want to throw this back to the states because the markets want certainty. Certainly lenders want certainty. We just need the CFPB to be to have oversight, which is what we're talking about here, and to find out how they're funded. Because right now it's just like this secret organization out there that can just come in and do whatever it wants to. And that's not fair.
Not fair. All right. I think you said something about transparency and certainty. I think when you have uncertainty, we watch what happens. We cluster into the middle. One time, I'll never forget, I was working with Ari Karen and something. It was a well-known attorney in our industry. And he says, Dave, this is like without good boundaries, without certainty. It's like playing football or soccer on top of an office building. Everyone's going to play in the middle because there's no boundary. There's no fences. You're not going to play to the edge of a cliff if you know there's something there and you could fall off. So when you have uncertainty, and if we undo this, and then we know there's a need for regulation, just human nature, we need to have some laws. Why are the laws on the speed limits? Things like that. But I'd love what another one of those Jack Connick things. He sent me a slide from one of his presentations. He says, CFPB would publish a speed limit like this. To find out what the speed limit is for this road, we encourage you to go to our website to take a look at the recent enforcement actions to determine what we have now determined to be the appropriate speed for this road. I mean, it's just this convoluted long sentence rather than saying 55 miles an hour. It's here. State it factually. And I think that's the thing. Cordray said, when he was the director, Cordray, when he is in there, says, well, we don't have the answers to a lot of your questions. We're going to encourage you just to watch the enforcement action and what we take, and you can glean from that. And those are the things that have driven us nuts, and that's why many would wish the CFPB to go away. But Begin said, beating this one up a little bit more, is be careful what you wish for. You might find yourself in the worst situation. We need certainty. So what Mr. Kittle and Alice said. Mark, put a bow on that. Anything you want to add?
Oh, I think the points are very well taken, and I'm with Mr. Kittle. I don't want to blow up CFPB. We got things that they instituted that are good things, and there's things not so good. But at the same time, if we do anything, we need to do it in an orderly fashion, and our government sometimes doesn't do things in an orderly fashion. I think we've got to stay on top of this and see what happens on the next turn, and I'm anxiously awaiting what we hear.
Yeah, take a look at FTX. Unregulated crypto. What happened there? Man, just leave that one alone. Alan Pollack, that's a good transition over technology. Good to have you with us, Alan. And what do you have for this week's tech report?
Good to be here. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. A couple quick points, actually quick facts about Thanksgiving. I think for all the major holidays, I kind of bring up these analytics. The first thing, which is really kind of interesting, David, you'll never guess, but and I'm going to give you one quick guess, even though I said you'll never guess, right? What is the length of time the average American male would need to spend on the treadmill to burn the 4,500 calories consumed at the average Thanksgiving meal?
I don't. All I know is I spend an hour on the treadmill, and I think if Kittle walks 5 miles every single day or some amount, and then carries his bag 18 holes. What is the number? What is that?
So it's 9 hours and 27 minutes.
Okay, so Kittle does that in 2 days. All right.
It's crazy.
You're giving away my secrets, David.
Yeah, suddenly David's going to become a TikToker giving away all of his weight loss secrets.
Yeah. Who knows? He may need
the
next thing. So anyway.
So anyways, just just, you know, because of inflation, right, and what we hear in the news, right? And I'm just going by what we hear in the news, which is right. All kinds of things. You shouldn't watch the news, by the way. But $301 is what the average person spending over the five-day Thanksgiving period is. And so I'm guessing these are look-back numbers from 2021. It'd be interesting next year to see what it really was for 22's Thanksgiving. But that's the fun stats for today. So a couple of quick things, David, and I have a theme, which is customer-centric overall.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, PowerPoint just released what they call the TikTokification of PowerPoint, and they're saying they're letting users create vertical portrait mode slides in its mobile apps. So because of the fact that everybody is using TikTok and they're sliding with their fingers and their thumbs, and you know, you've got Instagram videos and Facebook videos and all these other things out there, PowerPoint has decided to continue down the path and follow suit. Even YouTube did it, right, about a year ago. So look out for the TikTokification, they call it, of PowerPoint. Hmm. And then, David, I'm reading around all this wonderful stuff, and I'm thinking, gosh, what is – because you could say right now that as a company, right, forget that you're in mortgage, just as a corporation, a company, what would you be focusing on in 2023? And I kind of, you know – wanted to see what was out there. So I found a couple things. One is Forbes said that in 2023, we're focused on the immersive customer experience. Customers crave it. All right. Now think about that for a second and how you know, the conversations about mobile, the conversations about build versus buy, about partnering, marketing, right? Think about that. Forbes says in 2023, we're focused on the immersive customer experience. That doesn't have to mean 3D or, you know, the metaverse. That means that customers want to be engaged digitally, and they want to get information. They want to self-serve it. That's why Forbes said they crave it. So then, David, I jumped over to the Financial Brand, another fantastic place. If you don't read their stuff, you want to. But the Financial Brand says the top retail banking innovation trends for 2023. So we're talking about, right, physical financial institutions. We're talking about, you know, brick-and-mortar locations, a certain percentage of their businesses in mortgage lending. And you know what it says? Beyond creating the next big thing in innovation, it includes creating value through new and existing products, services, or processes that should incrementally improve customer and employee experiences, back office efficiency, and revenue opportunity. So where do I go with that? I jump finally to a acronym that we've talked about so many times on the program called DWTUT, which we were having all those acronym jokes, David. It's called Decide Where to Use Technology. And if you want to think about what the Financial Brand just said, who is your biggest user of your technology? It's your originators. It's your processors, your underwriters. It's your closing department. Well, have you ever surveyed them? Let's just say you're sticking with your technology solutions, right? You're never, ever going to change again. But have you surveyed your user? Have you thought about it doesn't have to be a net promoter score, but have you thought about what they think about the technology and what is their abandon rate? And for the folks that have a high abandon rate, meaning internal staff, and that means they're frustrated, they go for help, they can't get work done efficiently, who do they serve? Is there a high abandon rate where they serve? These are the things that you can do. You can incrementally improve your customer and employee experiences just by looking at that one data point. Second, and this will be the last one I mention for today, is when you look at a loan, you need to look at when it comes in. Where's your first touch point? And this doesn't mean I'm actually going after all the marketing, right? The loan has been originated. You have an app date, right? You've triggered RESPA. What are all the touch points and how long does that take? And are you creating that immersive experience? And that could mean nothing more than a daily text message, even if you're pretending like it's automated technology, but you're sending them something to let them know that, hey, the underwriter's looking at your file tray. We expect the appraisal to be back, right? It's that experience, the involvement. That's what they're craving. So think about that, where to use technology as you're considering not spending more money on more vendors and not changing vendors, but you need to improve that experience. You need to be ready for 23, and that's where I would focus some efforts. It's a loaded question, a loaded cannon, by the way. There's 1,000 things that you probably could do in 23, but you know, two publications, Forbes and the Financial Brand, all agree it is the immersive customer experience.
Yeah, it's all about the customer, as it should be, has always been, really, and it should remain so. What does that decide where that alphabet soup you gave us? It was decide where. Give that one more time.
DWTUT, decide where to use technology.
To use technology. That's good. I like that. I'm going to use that one. All right.
It's a Lickin' on Lending acronym.
Created by Alan Pollock himself. Good stuff. Good stuff. And then there was something else that you made, the financial brand. Is that a website? Is it financialbrand.com?
Yeah. Go to thefinancialbrand.com. And actually, the top retail banking innovation trends for 2023 is right on their homepage.
Okay.
But you can just search for tech innovation, mortgage, banking, online banking. There's so much in their site, just filled with great information and good articles.
Yeah, and then the tick-tocking of PowerPoint, I think it really gets down to is, are we communicating with where the next generation is? And, I mean, I find myself flipping through those TikToks and on YouTube, with like YouTube or Facebook, you're flicking through those things, and it's amazing how effective, how much can be said in such a little amount of time. Let's get around to the group. Alice, when you think of TikTok to do your next PowerPoint and your training, are you TikTok change your to a TikTok format? I'm not sure.
Are you TikToking?
Well,
are you TikToking?
Yeah, TikTok. We've been talking about that. We actually just started doing that for all our Encompass training. Everything's a minute long. Now, whether we're putting it to music and someone's dancing behind it in a silly costume, we haven't quite gone that far. But trying to make it fun so they pay attention. Great. That's absolutely where everyone's attention span is today, and how they want content delivered to them. Give it quick. Give it to me quick. I just want to see it quickly. I don't want to know the whole process. I just want to know the answer to my question right now.
Yeah. Well, I love the system that Bill and Al created there. It's the system. It's Ask Alice. It's a technology system. And I know you protested when they did that, but I respect them so much for honoring you with that, because Ask Alice, because you're a fountain of knowledge. And it's really a query system where commonly asked questions, they can go into the Ask Alice system and get so much about how this. And then it's, how do we access data? But then it's oftentimes how we present it. And then kudos to you, Alice. Not surprised that you would be finding new ways to communicate what needs to get out to the troops. Very good. Appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you.
You bet. Mr. Kittle and then Mr. Helm. Mr. Kittle, thoughts?
On TikTok? I'm not on it. I think if it works for some people, I think it's fabulous. If it's a teaching tool, I guess it does depend on your age group. I think that's certainly a statement on younger people's attention span. I think somebody said that, if they can get it done in a minute. I'm not sure how much you can train in a minute, or if it actually motivates them to dive deeper and read a little bit, but I don't know.
Good.
I'm not a fan of TikTok, but if it works in our industry for people, I'm all for it.
There's times where I'm going, why did I spend as much time on it? I think there's some programming that goes into it. And I mean, psychological programming that goes into it to capture you as well as it does. My wife would argue, she says, you can't even walk by a TV, you know, the TV department where they're selling TVs. You're just captured by anything screens. I just get like that swirling and get hypnotized. Mark Helm, what's your thoughts on Mr. Pollock's
comments? Well, I'll give my TikTok comment first. On TikTok, I know is when my alarm clock is ticking, and I won't let it tick too fast because I don't want to get up. But anyway, I'm not sure about TikTok. But I will tell you this. The younger generation now is requiring a great more information services and interface than any generation before it. And I think that's a positive thing. I think in our industry, technology has really addressed the front-end industry. And we got a lot of sponsors in this program done a great job helping the front-end. But I'm here to tell you, if I look back from when I chaired a couple decades ago when
Mr. Angelo Mozzillo asked me to chair the MBA Technology Committee, and I did. I looked at where our servicing technology was then, even compared to now. Haven't made that many many improvements in the servicing technology.
And the servicing, no. You're right.
No. And, you know, there's so much more we could do. There's so many things that you could do that don't require a human being to allow people to access certain information. I love the fact when I call in on an account, they send me a text, and I got to use a code and I can verify who I am to get into my account. We could do that on mortgage accounts, and people could do a better job of requesting their current payment status, whether insurance or taxes was paid, a payoff statement, all kind of things that they could do electronically better. But I think the new generation is going to push that, and I think the industry ought to focus on that some. But I will give the industry kudos. I think the industry, at least in my experience, has been really, really focusing on the front end and making the experience of the bar quicker, better, faster, and allowing to push home ownership out to all those people that want that opportunity to have a home. And I'm real pleased to be a part of an industry that is really focused on getting out to customers and talking to them.
Yeah, Rose, and it's a shout out to our company, to our number of our sponsors, Form Free, what they're doing, Candor, what they're doing in the underwriting area, what we have Total Expert and Simple Nexus doing now. I mean, there is a lot of things. And then when it comes to recruiting, Mobility, MMI, and Modex, I mean, there are some great technologies that are really helping us focus in where we need to be focusing. But I think we all need to really examine, like Alice said, the foresight to start changing up how she's presenting information in her training. I think this is what leadership is about, seeing what's going on in the trends and then following them. That's what this podcast is about, listeners. We're trying to bring you the latest information, what is going on, and we're grateful for you being here. Mark, anything you have that you want to share on servicing or agencies before we go out the door here?
Not this week, David. I think we're going to, you and I are going to work on doing that servicing podcast a little bit from now. And I think that's going to be good. And so let me mention that on this podcast. I think it'll be real beneficial for anyone listening to the podcast. David and I are going to do a podcast particularly on servicing. And so this is an opportunity for those of you listening. If you have a question about servicing or a concern or something that thinks to be approved, send it to us. Give it to us so we can bring it up as a topic on that podcast and discuss what's happening in the industry. We might know something you don't know, but you might also give us some ideas that we can plant in the seed of people that can do something about it. So share any questions or concerns you have with us, and we would be very appreciative. We hope to do that in the next few weeks. Thank you.
We will. Yes. Thank you, Mark. Appreciate it very much. Let's go around. Anything else running around the room real fast? Alice, anything that you've thought of as we wrap up the program that you want to share?
No, just ditto what Mark just said. I think that's a terrific suggestion.
Yeah, we do need to do that. Mark and I were talking about, you know, we need to give some tidbits out on servicing and the Fannie Mae and agencies, and he goes, there's so much to talk about. Can we just record one, and then we'll do follow-up on that big recording? So I'm looking forward to doing that here. We're going to get that hopefully recorded this week or next, and then we'll do it, releasing it within the next couple of weeks. So very good. Thanks, Alice, for doubling down on that. Alan, any thoughts you have?
No, have a great week, and remember, you know, continue to evaluate your technology and find ways to make great improvements that will not only improve customer retention, acquisition, but also lower your costs.
Lower your costs. TikTok it. That's good. I love that. Good stuff. You always bring us something that sticks with us. Mr. Kittle, wrapping final thoughts?
Nope, always good to end with words of wisdom from Mark Helm, especially around servicing. So ditto to what he said.
Yep, good deal. Mark, team, thank you so much. Appreciate you being here every week and sharing this knowledge and wisdom with each of our people. Again, a special thank you to our sponsors. I already mentioned some of them, but Candor, Finastra, Form Free, Total Expert, Simple Nexus, the Mortgage Bankers Association, Lenders One, the Mortgage Collaborative, and Knowledge Coop. Could talk a lot about Knowledge Coop, sharing the knowledge. That's really good. Mobility, MMI, and Modex, the two great recruiting tools, and mortgage advisory tools. Grateful to all of you. Thanks for being here, sharing this podcast with your peers in the industry. It's a great way to get information updated while you're working out, driving, or just taking a walk. Sometimes we all need to take a walk with all this that's going on. Again, we look forward to hearing from you. Have a great week and send us your ideas and questions about servicing. We'll be recording that here very soon. Thank you much. Have a great week, everybody.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.